Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guests this week, Jan Ethier and Bruce Williamson. One event that I know you're both engaged with is the Right for Rights event. Can you tell us about that and why it's important to you?
Every year around December the 10th, which is International Human Rights Day, activists in 140 countries around the world write letters calling for the protection and promotion of human rights. Why December the 10th? That is when the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted at the United Nations. As we know, unfortunately, human rights violations ranging from torture, unfair trials, mass killings, enforced disappearances are still common in many countries. So the purpose of Amnesty's Right for Human Rights is to mark International Human Rights Day by bombarding authorities responsible for human rights abuses with letters from all over the world on a few selected cases.
How are the cases chosen?
Well, we use our dear friends at Amnesty International who use their staff to highlight particular cases. And my understanding, one of the things I think Amnesty does well is that they do look at cases where they feel they're with some pressure on governments, situations can change. So often we receive good news after we have written our letters, and when we are one of many, many countries who do this particular activity. But we do have proof that letters work. We know that Amnesty's activism is a significant factor in helping many individuals be freed.
And what about your local efforts to raise funds? What do you find most effective as a fundraiser? Can you tell us about this year's efforts?
Biggest fundraiser for us is dinner that is held in April or May, most often in April, at the Woodlawn Inn.
In Coburg.
So a very fine and tasty dinner, but even better are the speakers that come. And sometimes they are people, journalists, who are working on human rights cases often in Canada or with refugees into Canada, as was our case last year. But Jan has been planning already for the upcoming year, and there's exciting guests coming. So, Jan.
I'm very humbled and delighted to say that we have been given the okay for a dear man who was imprisoned in Iran for over 5 years. Hamid Ghashemi Shal is a Canadian of Iranian descent, and he was arrested in Iran on espionage charges in 2008 and sentenced to death the following year. The Canadian government and the Senate called for a stay of execution, and in April 2012, Amnesty began an extensive letter-writing campaign on his behalf. His wife, Antonella Mega, began traveling around Canada to speak on her husband's behalf. I was fortunate enough to hear Antonella speak about a year and a half ago in Toronto on her husband's behalf. And after an effort by our government and through Amnesty International, and our local group had a very small part in writing letters on his behalf, and Hamid was freed in October 2013 and returned to Canada. And he and Antonella have very kindly agreed to be our speakers this year. So we are very blessed to have them as our speakers.
Sounds an exciting evening ahead.
It is very, very exciting, yes.
Yes. So how can people get involved with your organization? I mean, you know, I send Amnesty Christmas cards and the little card that comes with the candle on it for a prisoner. But obviously people can get more deeply involved.
But not to underestimate the importance of what you have done by sending a Christmas card with that candle on the front, because that's the beacon of hope you've given the person who is in prison. And it also, the people who are imprisoning them kind of note that this man, this woman, has received how many hundreds or thousands of cards from around the world. So you may think it's a modest little action that you're taking. It's a huge action that you're doing, because it's not in isolation. It's joining in with all the others. The Amnesty meetings are held at Trinity United Church.
Second Monday.
Better to have that correct. 7 o'clock. It's, you know, not a super formal organization, so that I think the beauty of it is that people are able to come in and out as they're able to contribute with the skills that that they have. So sometimes it's a person who has had connections to Spirit of the Hills and can advise us on Word Northumberland, gives that kind of contribution. Other people have skills around, let's say, doing background publicity kind of things, and make those connections for us. And so people join us with the feeling that they don't have to commit a huge amount of time, but what they do commit, they know is making a difference.
It's a meeting of like-minded people who get together to see what they can do.
Yeah, we're between 12 and 15 who come out to each meeting, and we're very pleased that that is the number that comes, because we learned that in a city that is much, much, much bigger than ours, they've only been able to get five people to their things. So it shows a real kind of interest is evident here in our area.
Mm-hmm. So now can I ask you, one of you, to read another excerpt from your book club choice?
All right. Well, I've chosen to read from Joseph Boyden's book, 3-Day Road, which actually was the first book chosen for the Amnesty Book Club, and it was selected by author Nino Ricci. And just to give a little background on the book, is basically about two Cree men who are sharpshooters in the First World War. But more deeply, it is a clash of First Nations culture and white culture in the near extinction of First Nations culture. It also helps us see how we in our culture have misrepresented First Nations, but what it actually looks like from the inside.
Right.
I'm going to read a section here where it's Christmas time in the First World War, and they're having a bit of a reprieve in France, and they're in a bit of a pub. Part is written from the perspective of Xavier, one of the two of the native men. The men act as if Elijah and I are not even here, talking and gesturing and drinking from the many bottles on the table. A few of them hold long knives with them, wicked blades and brass knuckles for handles, and play games with one another, placing their hands out on the table and spreading their fingers, allowing the other to tap the point of his knife as fast as he can between the digits, a blur of glinting metal between fingers. Elijah is mesmerized by the game. He stares with his head tilted and his mouth held loose. One man, tall and thin and wiry strong, stands and gestures wildly with his knife, then acts out a scene of struggle with an imaginary enemy, sneaking up behind him, making the motion of slitting his throat, then grabbing the head of his crumpled enemy on the floor by his hair and slicing the scalp from the skull. He is good with his movements, fluid so that I can tell he has done that very many times before. The men all raise glasses and repeat words that I don't know, then drink again. I'm as fascinated as Elijah. Just when I'm beginning to wonder whether they even remember that we are among them, the tall, wiry one turns to us. He neither smiles nor sneers, but just stares for a while. Elijah is looking away, but I know he sees everything anyway. I meet the man's gaze and hold it till the Frenchman motions for us to join them at the table. We are given a bottle of thick red wine. Elijah takes a deep drink. You don't look like Canadians that I've seen, the wiry one says. His voice has a heavy accent, but his English seems good. The other men continue to talk with one another, but I can tell that they are listening. I'm an Indian, Elijah says, from the north. This one too, but he doesn't speak much English. Does he speak French? The man asks. Elijah shakes his head. He's a heathen, speaks his own tongue fluently, nothing else. I look to Elijah, and I think only then does he realize how much my English has improved these last months, that I understand his joke. I've heard of one of you Indians, a Canadian too. They say he has killed many, many men, that he is the best hunter of us all. Elijah smiles and is ready to nod his thanks for the kind words when the Frenchman continues, "His name is Peggy, and he works alone." Elijah has heard of this Peggy just as I have. Neither of us has spoken about him lately since he hasn't been active. "I hear rumor that he's dead," Elijah says. "No, he is not dead," the thin one answers. All in the room are listening now. "He just works alone. His CO refuses to acknowledge all the kills he makes since he doesn't like to work with a spotter, but he is the best. He has killed many Hun." "I would like to meet this Peggy," Elijah says. We all drink, and Elijah and I listen to them talk their French, and I see he grows angry thinking about this Peggy. "What kind of name is that, anyway?" I can hear him say to himself. Getting up, I watch as he makes his way outside and to the back of this house, the voices and music wafting out the open window. He notices the cold as he rolls up his sleeve and searches for skin that is not too bruised. Even in the darkness, he can see the black discoloration running up and down his arm. He takes the short needle from the moose hide bag in his chest pocket and slips it in quickly, efficiently, wincing as he hits a tender area. His whole arm is tender. Elijah practices self-control, knowing as he floods his vein that he is using the medicine right now out of anger. Just enough goes into him that he no longer feels the pain of his arm or of the cold. The golden halo sits down around his head, and he's protected once more.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you. And thank you both for coming in today and talking to us. We've really enjoyed making the program with you. To our listeners, you can hear our programs anytime and from anywhere on our Word on the Hills website, www.wordonthehills.com. Or to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com. Thanks to you all for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.